Welcome. This is James Corbett of Global Research TV at grtv.ca coming to you with another edition of the weekly Global Research TV feature interview video series. Today we are honored to be talking to Sibel Edmonds, a former FBI translator and of course a whistleblower whose story has become something of lore over the last several years. And now she's not only the founder and president of the National Security Whistleblowers Coalition, but also hosts and edits an independent nonpartisan investigative journalism media website, boilingfrogspost.com, which in the interest of disclosure, I contribute to. So Sibel Edmonds, it's great to have you on. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, James.
All right. Well, today I want to talk broadly about the topic of whistleblowing and specifically about the ways that that I think people are misled into protesting against the crackdown on whistleblowers in ways that are not particularly helpful, and how people can really, construct the type of system that we need in order to protect whistleblowers. But it's such a mind-bogglingly large topic, and one that I know that you've been concerned with for many years. But I think before we begin, maybe it would even be helpful to even address the term itself, whistleblowers, because I think that becomes so loaded with so much emotional baggage, and there are so many connotations with that word, when really whistleblowers are not special human beings. They're really just people who are really trying to do their job and trying to protect the interests of whatever it is they're involved in, their corporation or the government or whatever agency they might be working for. So perhaps you can talk a little bit about whistleblowing itself and really what that term means.
Right. Whistleblowers, the term in general refers to reporting wrongdoing. Now, whether it is you witness somebody robbing somebody's house and you dial the police and say, you know, this is happening, you're reporting a crime. You're reporting, let's say, waste, fraud, abuse in the government or some kind of a criminal actions. And I always make the distinction between two types of categories of whistleblowers today. One whistle category is the whistle refers to the whistleblowers from the government. These are the government employees who report wrongdoing. The other ones are the private whistleblowers who work for various companies, etc. And there is a big, big difference. And that's one of the things that people don't realize, how much difference there is between the two sets of whistleblowers. Number one, whistleblowers in the government agencies, they shouldn't even be called whistleblowers because they are doing what they are supposed to be doing. Because government, especially with the intelligence agencies, the defense agencies, they take an oath of office. And in fact, as part of their position, they are told that they are obligated to report wrongdoings, whether it's again government waste, fraud, abuse. So basically, they are doing what they are supposed to be doing, reporting these issues through various channels, because they are actually working for the taxpayers, for the people. And this is in theory. This is in the United States, it's supposed to be the government of the people, for the people, by the people, or at least that notion still exists in people's head. And so does in the heads of whistleblowers. So they report wrongdoings. And if the government employees, they all took their oath seriously and what they are supposed to be doing, their obligations, you wouldn't even have this term called whistleblowers. Because that would be part of the norm. Because how else would you have wrongdoings exposed? It's people reporting it, those people who are witnessing it. So that's one big difference in the term. The other thing that a lot of people, again, thanks to the mainstream media and the quasi-alternative media, people don't understand is with the corporate media, with the corporate companies, with private companies, when you have whistleblowers, they go to the government. They report the wrongdoing to the government, and they bring their cases to court, and the government supports them. With the government whistleblowers, there exists no outside entity to take your report to. Now, in theory, they say you have these channels that we give you, we the government give you, that you're supposed to be going to if you're blowing the whistle or reporting wrongdoing. That is specific committees within the Congress, that is the federal courts, And within the agency where the wrongdoing is taking place, it's the, you know, the various offices. They call it the Inspector General's office. In the FBI, they have another office set up called the Office of Professional Responsibilities. But in the end, you're taking your report as a government whistleblower to the government, you see? And the government is the one that is, you know, is the entity that is engaged in the wrong, in wrongdoing. So therefore, there are no channels. There are no outside entities channels to take your report, your whistleblowing case, and seek remedy, not for yourself, for the public, whether the victims are the taxpayers or the victims are people who are being, you know, wronged. There are no channels.
It's exactly right, and I think it's an important distinction to make, because that distinction, as I understand it, has come up recently in whistleblower protection legislation, which does offer protections in a lot of ways for corporate whistleblowers, but takes away a lot of protections, such as they even exist for national security whistleblowers. So I think that is an important distinction. But I guess to start, I guess get everyone on the same base level of understanding about the topic and to establish your bona fide as a whistleblower, perhaps you can tell us a little bit about your own experience with the FBI and then how you came to found the National Security Whistleblower Coalition.
Sure. My case actually is a classic example of a government whistleblower following the so-called channels, doing what the system tells them to do. That's what I did. So when I came across and I found wrongdoing, including the reports, the evidence, the documents, the witnesses, what I did with that was what I was told I should be doing. And that was, I went to my superiors. Nothing happened. In fact, I was retaliated against. Then I went to the higher-ups. I went to this office called, within the FBI, the Office of Professional Responsibility, OPR. And I gave my report to them. They were prevented from investigating it, and they told me to take it to the Justice Department, one layer higher, to the Inspector General's office, which I did. And again, when nothing happened, I went to the Congress. That is the next step. Now, for the Justice Department and FBI employees and workers, the appropriate committees for reporting wrongdoing is the Judiciary Committee or the Intelligence Committee. So I did that, and I exhausted that channel. Then they said, well, there is one more channel left for you to pursue, and that is taking your case to courts. Well, you can't, as a whistleblower, take your case to any court. You have to take your case to a federal court, to federal judges. Now, again, many don't understand the implications of that. When you're an employee of FBI or the CIA or the Defense Department, the laws, the Constitution, the rights don't apply to you. You can't, for example, have jury, trial by jury, meaning the federal judge has to decide on your case. You have to present your case to the federal judge. If you're lucky as a whistleblower and you can dish out $350, $400 per hour, and trust me, those hours, they add up very, very quickly. And I can tell you this much, based on my experience with hundreds of whistleblowers, over 90% of the whistleblowers can't afford that. They have already lost their jobs or about to lose their jobs. They have families to support. They can't go and give the $350 per hour and spend tens of thousands of dollars to represent their case in court. So that option actually is not available in reality to the whistleblowers. And even when you have the money, you'd be surprised to know how many private attorneys do not want to have anything to do with FBI or CIA-related cases. I went to several law firms, and I said, okay, I'll give your $350 per hour. They said, we really don't want to mess with the FBI. It's the FBI. And we all have our skeletons in our closets. We all have our businesses and maybe things that are not exactly stellar. We don't want to mess with the FBI. And they just told me straightforward, we won't take your case because we don't want to deal with the FBI. We don't want to deal with the CIA. And on top of that, if you are with these intelligence agencies, you have another battle, which nobody has won. And that's the battle of secrecy, because it's the government and your agency that tells you, well, you can't present this evidence. It's secret. We consider it classified. You cannot present this issue or topic in court before the judge or even to the media. We consider it classified. We decide what is classified, what is not classified. Therefore, there is no way to blow the whistle when you work for government agencies, especially for these really important agencies such as the FBI and the Pentagon and the CIA.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, these are the most critical functions that the government has, and to the fact that they're suppressing whistleblowing from inside is really, I mean, incredibly worrying to anyone who has any understanding of what these agencies are designed to do. And for those people who aren't familiar with what your position was there or what the nature of the information that you were attempting to blow the whistle on, perhaps you can bring people up to speed on that.
Sure. My reports had several categories of wrongdoing reports, or in some cases, criminal cases. Part of it had to do with the penetration of the FBI by individuals who actually worked for and with the FBI's targets of investigations, foreign organizations and entities that were engaged in narcotics dealings in the United States, bringing in narcotics, these same criminal organizations, they also had foreign lobby arm, and they funneled money to various elected representatives during their campaign or even outside their campaigns. And in some cases, the way they funneled the money, first of all, it's illegal to give foreign dollars, supposedly, to your representative's campaign, to congressmen, senators who are running for office. And then part of it had to do with appointed U.S. officials in agencies such as the State Department, Pentagon, specifically nuclear labs in certain Air Force bases across the country, people who were dealing information for money. And these are nuclear and weapons-related secrets that the U.S. had, and they were giving it basically to the highest bidders, these foreign entities. So it had several elements. Part of it dealt with the cover-up of certain 9/11-related information. One of my investigation files that I worked with, a counterintelligence agent, special agent, dealt with operations of FBI targets between 1996 and 2001. And these targets simultaneously were working with the State Department and the CIA overseas in bringing about terrors in certain areas. For example, and I have said this, the government has said this is a state secret privilege, and people, they say, well, why doesn't she talk? Well, I have said that. I've said between 1996 and 2001, many of the top Chechen-related terrorism were directly supported by our own government and their operatives, agents, both foreign and also domestic here. We actually helped Chechen groups for 5 years directly to blow up people, to kidnap people, to kill people. We had direct, not indirect support, direct. So these were the kinds of things that it contained. Now, granted, the Congress wouldn't consider that criminal. They considered our secrets, our country's secrets. These are our intelligence operations. You know, we engage in terrorism outside our country. I think a lot of people have already come to this understanding that that's what we do. To somehow that these terrorism activities benefit our countries, well, 9/11 supposedly proved that it didn't. So I took this information, and as I mentioned before, I took it through all these appropriate channels, and nothing happened. And I lost in every single one of those steps. I went all the way to the Supreme Court, and they would not hear the case, not because of its merits, because the government said it is state secrets privilege. Everything about this woman, Sybelle Edmonds, is secret classified, including her birthplace and the languages she performed translation for us. So that was the course. With Congress, that's another interesting thing. First of all, we haven't seen a single case where Congress truly helps a whistleblower, government whistleblower, and has hearing. It hasn't happened, really. And in some cases that you have quasi-hearings or quasi-actions, it's when your issue that you report has partisan quality in it. For example, during the Bush administration, if my case only dealt with George Bush administration's criminal wrongdoing, cover-up issues, then I believe I would have received more support. But when I went to these offices, I had to tell the truth and say, well, these cases involve two administrations because they started in 1996, went on until 2002, Clinton administration and the Bush administration. And that is a no-no flag. That's when neither party wants to use your case to go after another party. So that was another defeating element in my case. It was not a partisan case. It is not a partisan case. And as far as the government agency's so-called channels go, the inspector general, after dragging their foot for more than 2 years, they issued a report and they classified over 90% of their report. They said, here is the 10% declassified version. And it said I was right and that my claims, my allegations were supported by other witnesses and documents. And in the end, it didn't mean anything. So even the department's own inspector general put out a report and said, she's right. We can't tell you what she was reporting, but she was right. So Congress had that, FBI had it, and nothing happened. It basically, in the end, proves that there are no channels. It's futile. If you want to report wrongdoing, if you believe the American people needs to know whether in their name criminal actions are taking place or there's government waste, fraud, abuse involving their tax dollars, people need to find a way to put that information out directly into the public. And that brings us to another important issue, and that is the absence of a real media. And that's when it comes to mainstream media or the popular pseudo-alternative media. But fortunately, on the positive sides, we have websites like yours, and we have people like John Young with Cryptum. There are channels still. They haven't done anything. This is the government, the establishment with the internet yet. Most likely it will take place. We are seeing a little bit of the evidence of what they are trying to do with the WikiLeaks cases. Anonymously put out the information. If you believe it's something that people need to know, put out the information. Don't come out, blow the whistle publicly. Don't go to Congress because you're going to the culprits. Because Congress has actively participated in these wrongdoings. I mean, if you look at the torture cases, if you look at the NSA's illegal eavesdropping, the whistleblowers did their job. They did their part. They reported it, right? And to a certain extent, the media reported it. So it came out. After that, it was up to the Congress to do something about it or the courts. And neither one has done anything. And that basically tells the American people there is no separation of powers here and that there is no oversight. And we have one establishment, one government. And with this illusion of the separation between the court and the courts and the Congress and the White House, the executive branch, but in reality, there isn't. We haven't done anything about NSA's illegal eavesdropping, despite the whistleblowers. We haven't done anything about the torture, despite the whistleblowers. We haven't done anything about all these secret assassinations and nothing. We haven't done anything. Our government hasn't done anything because it is one government.
That in itself, I think, is the most damning indictment of the government that's possible. And you've just laid out, I think, in stunning detail how the three branches of government are really, I mean, when it comes down to it and when the entire government itself is threatened, are really one and the same and will close ranks and protect each other. And that's really worrying because, of course, the three branches were set up specifically to avoid that type of thing taking place. But we've arrived at that situation nonetheless. So let's back up and examine some of the pieces that you laid out on the table there, because I think some of them are just so startling that we shouldn't just gloss over them. For example, the invocation of the state secrets privilege in your case, which at the time was something quite quite amazing, quite rare to actually classify so much about you and to really stop your First Amendment privilege from even speaking out on these issues or even filing depositions in cases related to your issue. I mean, it's an absolutely stunning move, but unfortunately has proven quite prescient as it's become used more and more frequently, and especially by the Obama administration. We'll get more into that later, but perhaps you can talk a little bit about the state secrets privilege and really what that means for whistleblowers.
I was the first victim of the state secrets privilege for the Bush administration. State secrets privilege is not a law. It's not a constitutional law that had ever passed the Congress. It's an executive privilege, presidents and the executive branch's privilege based on common law that came from Great Britain. They have similar law called the Official Secret Act. And this basically is exactly the same thing. And it's not constitutional. It has never been passed by Congress. And it used to be used rarely. One case was the Reynolds case in 1950s when the Air Force actually engaged in a big time wrongdoing, and then a subsequent cover up. But when the case moved against this cover up in court, they invoked the government invoked the state secrets privilege. So it was used rarely. Another time that it was used was in Richard Barlow's case, the CIA analyst who went to Congress. He didn't come out to blow the whistle publicly, but he went to Congress and told the Congress that our government was, and this was the Pentagon and the CIA, they were hiding the fact that they knew, and they had all the reports and evidence that the Pakistan was putting together their nuclear capabilities, and they have been covering it up, and they were trying to ensure that government the Congress didn't find out about it. Well, his case became a state secrets privilege case, and this was in the 90s. Then my case came as the first state secrets privilege case for the Bush administration, and amazingly, it really received no media coverage. I stood before the court in front of the courthouse with a few alternative media representatives and a couple of mainstream media reporters who were standing there. And I told them, I said, you are going to see this case happening again and again. And there's a video out there from that particular date in 2004. There is a video out there. And I said, this is going to happen again and again because you're letting it happen. It's not going to be limited with my case. And sure enough, the state secrets privilege became fashionable because government saw that, and this is the executive branch, that they got away with it. But in my case, American citizen, an FBI employee with an inspector general's report that says my reports were proven correct. They were supported by facts. And if they could do it in my case, well, sure enough, they could do it in other people's case. So in their torture cases, they started invoking the state secrets privilege. In other government, including the NSA illegal eavesdropping, they started invoking state secrets privilege, and they have been invoking it since. And I tried, it was a very futile attempt to raise awareness and get the Congress to do something about it, because Congress has the power, the United States Congress, to examine this and say, this is being abused. We don't recognize it as law. And therefore, they can just put a stop to it. The invocation of state secrets privilege. They haven't done it. They have not, and they have not even expressed any desire or willingness to even look into it. Same thing with the court. As it was the case with my own case with the courts, the Supreme Court, they say, we don't want to hear about state secrets privilege. We will not let the issue of state secrets privilege be discussed, and we are not going to do it. And they haven't done it. So again, you're looking at the notion of no separation between the three branches. You have this collusion between the three branches and no separations and no oversight. And as long as that's the case, people can go rallying Congress as I did for 3 years and waste their energy and time.
Unfortunately so, and that's exactly, I think, the point, is that there are so many false avenues that are presented to whistleblowers and people who are campaigning on a variety of issues, including the state secrets privilege, and it's what Steve Cohn of the National Whistleblower Center has called the yellow brick road part of the whistleblowing experience, where people believe that all of these systems that are set up for reporting misconduct are actually going to help them, but eventually you come to the point where you realize that, especially in national security, as you point out, that is not the case. So perhaps we can talk a little bit about the founding of the National Security Whistleblower Coalition in 2004 and what really your intention was to do with that organization.
Well, initially, when I went through these channels, the so-called channels, I went to the internet, for example, and I put, and this is 2002, October 2002, and I typed the word state secrets privilege. You know how many results I got from the Google search, Yahoo search? 6. And 4 of them were duplicates. Nobody had written anything about the state secrets privilege. I wanted to know how to fight, where to go, what to do. So I searched the word whistleblowers, and I came across these organizations popping up, like Project on Government Oversight, POGO.org, or Government Accountability Project. And I said, oh, great, I didn't know about these people. So there are these non-governmental outside organizations that I can go, and they will help me, the whistleblower. You know, FBI whistleblower who has gone already to Congress. I need legal advice. I need support with media to raise awareness, public awareness on this issue. So I did what their website said I should be doing. I typed out they have two forms. I contacted by phone their offices. Not a single organization returned my calls, returned my emails, or the report that I was sending via their own forms. And interestingly, after a while, I gave up. Then after the ACLU took my case and it became a little bit more visible and a little bit more high profile in the media, it was amazing how quickly these organizations came to me and they wanted to have a piece of the action, saying, we salute Sabelle Edmonds. This is why we have to pass the laws on whistleblowers. And suddenly I became their pet project without even being with them. Then because of this whole entire journey, I got to know many, many other government whistleblowers from the FBI, CIA, the Justice Department, the Pentagon, TSA, the Department of Homeland Security. And interestingly, all of us, when we came together and started forming connections and started communicating, we found out that none of these organizations have helped any of these peoples. And these organizations, these NGOs, they have been around for 20 years, supposedly campaigning in Congress, trying to pass better legislation. Based on their website, they have been trying to help whistleblowers and advise. Well, we have not come across any of these whistleblowers, and I'm talking about hundreds of whistleblowers. And then we looked at what these people have been doing in Congress. I always give the analogy of this tango. There is this by mutual agreement between these representatives, the congressmen, the senators in particular relevant committees, and these NGOs to do this dance of, okay, there are some of these congressmen who want to support these NGOs' objectives on whistleblower laws. Then these NGOs, they go campaign. And in the end, nothing happens for whistleblowers, but for some reason, some congressmen, they get medals of honor and they are clapped for saying they champion the cause of the whistleblowers. And then those congressmen and people, they come and give medals to these organizations saying these people champion the cause of whistleblowers. And we, the whistleblowers, government whistleblowers, sitting there saying every day things have been getting worse for us and nobody has been representing us, neither on that side, the Congress, nor these NGOs. So we said, well, after we try to pound on these organizations, try to get them work with us, to actually work for us, we gave up and we said, well, you know what? Let's form our own coalition. Let's speak for ourselves, because obviously these organizations, POGO, GAP, they are not speaking for us. Nothing they say represents where we are. Whatever they are doing with the media is actually backfiring. It's not helping us. They are giving this false sense of assurance that there are things that are available to whistleblowers, that Congress is working to help the whistleblowers. But in reality, these are grand lies. These are all false information. That's why we formed this coalition. And when we did that initially, it was very interesting. We were approached by people connected to various foundations, the Soros Foundations, the Hewlett-Packard Foundations. They came and they said, well, what you're doing is great. This will bring lots of publicity, all these whistleblowers banding together. But you need to do it more professionally, like POGO does. And these are the same people who've been funding POGO and GAP. You need to have a PR person in-house. Sabelle, you are not a PR person. You have no idea what PR is. And I didn't, really. At the time, I didn't. Oh, you need to have analysts. You need to have board of directors, board of advisors. I said, well, we are each other's advisors. We have gone through the experience. And interestingly, none of these organizations have any whistleblowers in their board of directors, board of advisors. They are whistleblowers organizations without any really whistleblowers within their organizations. And then you need to do fundraising so you can have office, because if you have raised your voice this much without having these elements, imagine how much more you can do, how much more power you can have with the Congress. It all sounded good, but very quickly I realized that these money, that these carrots that they were dangling before our nose, these foundations, came with a bunch of strings and attachments. Because as I was talking with these people, with foundations, I was adding more whistleblowers. And in one case, one whistleblower from Clinton, previous administration, joined the coalition, who had blown the whistle on Al Gore and some narcotics-related issue case within the Drug Enforcement Agency, DEA. When I added this particular whistleblower, and he's still there on our list, these foundation people came and they said, why are you adding the Clinton administration whistleblower? Right now we are focused on Bush administration. This is distraction, and you should just limit to all these current wrongdoings and don't get into all the Clinton stuff. And basically, this was just one example of many examples. And I said, you know something? I think the difference that we have between us and these organizations that have been around for 20 years, owned by these corporate foundations. And I say corporate because we say corporate media all the time. It's a commonly known term, but nobody talks about corporate foundations owned media, for example, or corporate foundations owned NGOs, these nonprofit organizations. Because they're the same corporations. All these corporations, the one that we are talking about, they set up these little foundations on the side. Through their ad and corporations, they do the stuff with the mainstream media. Through their foundation, they own the NGOs and the alternative media, many of them. And you're looking at the same people, you're looking at the same money, and you're looking at the same desire for power and influence, the control, the sense of control that they want to exert. I mean, even places like J.P. Morgan, they have a foundation. You know, then of course you're looking at Rockefellers. Yes, they have their businesses, but they have their foundations funded by the dollars of the same corporations and by the people with the same agenda. They are the same people. So when these people, they come and they give POGO $4 million a year. And this is a whistleblower organization. And $500,000 of it comes from Senator Rockefeller and his family. How could you expect that organization to go truly rally and campaign and get the Senate Intelligence Committee's Rockefeller do something about intelligence-related whistleblowers? When you have George Soros or alike go and give them $500,000 and say, however, you do not deal with Obama whistleblowers and you do not deal with Clinton. I want you to deal with only Bush administration whistleblowers. And then you have people on the other side of the coin. They're the people who are doing the opposite. Don't deal with, you know, the Bush administration whistleblowers. These organizations, these NGOs and these alternative medias, they hurt actually our cause, those of us who want change, more so than mainstream media. But mainstream media is pretty clear and obvious. Okay, they have the ads, they are owned by the corporations. Okay, and the same corporations have to basically control our government. It's that they are the shadow government. But with alternative, especially when you go and look at their mission statement and their objectives, people, they get this false sense of security that, hey, these are different. They are not funded by corporates. They're funded by the foundations. Well, those foundations are the corporations, and they do have the same agenda, so you don't have any difference between these people. And just take a look at the DC, the Beltway Corridor, you will see thousands of these NGOs. You would see hundreds of NGOs under George Soros alone. You know, they. So that's why we formed the National Security Whistleblowers Coalition. That's why we decided we were not going to do fundraising. We were not going to get a penny from the foundation. We were not going to have some bureaucratic board of advisors, including Rockefeller family member and a Soros family member, and et cetera. And we were just going to directly go and lobby and rally in Congress for our rights, which is actually not the whistleblowers' right. That's another distinction. Our rights for whistleblowers to blow the whistle and report wrongdoing, it becomes the people's right, because it's that we are trying to raise awareness on the taxpayers being abused, their dollars being wasted, fraudulently used, or the security issues that the citizens pay with their security. So we are serving the interests of the people. Therefore, the protection, real channels for whistleblowers become the benefit, the what serves the citizens of this country. That's another thing I would like to really emphasize here. It's not whistleblowers' right that in some way we gain. No, it is providing these channels, these protections for whistleblowers, so the citizens benefit. So we went to Congress for 4 years. We rallied. We went to offices and we had some experts to talk about why and how the whistleblowers benefit the public. And after 4 years and two different majorities in 2008, we closed that chapter. We basically decided that trying to pass new laws, they have been passing so many laws on these issues, on secrecy, on whistleblowers, it's not the solution and it's not the answer. Because you pass laws, those laws have to be implemented. Who's going to implement them? Let's say they even include all these intelligence agencies, whistleblowers, and say, okay, they have to be protected. Who's going to protect them? The same government agencies that retaliate against the whistleblowers and cover up? Absolutely no. The same federal courts that have done nothing with other issues that have been known? That's not going to happen. Or is it the Congress? Well, the Congress, of course, has the power. But when was the last time the United States Congress used its power? When was the last time the Congress said, I'm going to subpoena certain people and I'm going to withhold the budget of certain agencies? Nobody can think of an instance that has happened in the past 20 years. The Congress, I mean, it became public. The NSA is engaged in violation of our Fourth Amendment in illegal eavesdropping. It's not allegation. This is a known fact. Well, the Congress has the power to make the NSA stop. They can hold their budget and say, you are not going to get a single dollar. We are not going to confirm your director. Well, they haven't done it. They are not doing it. Why? Even though the topic has received some level of media coverage, it's a known fact. It's a proven, you know, report, and they haven't done anything. It's been 6 years since it became public. They haven't done anything. Well, the same thing applies with the whistleblowers. We can go and pass the prettiest law that would read like a poetic novel, saying how important we are, we the government whistleblowers, and what should be done to protect us and to do something about our reports, but who's going to implement? Therefore, to go ask this government that is engaged in all these wrongdoings to do something about these wrongdoings, it defies all logic. So So then what's the solution? Well, the solution is, this is why we quit doing that. And I started the Boiling Frogs post to tell people that unless we the people go back and reclaim our rights that exist, reclaim them. And unless we decide that we have to actually act upon the fact that we should be the masters of this government, not its servants, nothing is going to happen. Nothing is going to change. I mean, we do need the Americans to spring here. And we need to replace these people. And I'm not talking about vote one party against another party. Both parties are part of the same establishment. We need to get rid of this corrupt, extremely powerful institution and replace it with one that is representative of the people of this country. And it's not going to happen with the channels that they are advertising, some of these dissent channels. It's not going to happen by rallying the Congress and pass more whistleblower laws. It's not going to happen by these NGOs filing motion after another motion in courts against the NSA's illegal eavesdropping or our secret assassinations. It's not going to happen. We have to go and we have to grab it. We have to take it. And even if by force, and that's the only solution left. And until we come to that point, we need to conserve our energy, unite, and not waste with these NGOs and these so-called actionable items like going and rallying Congress and going to offices, serving them petitions with 150,000 signatures saying, please listen to us, please do something. We have been begging for a long, long time, and begging is not going to do it. We have to go and take it.
Well, I unfortunately, we have arrived at that situation because it's quite obvious that the government is not by and for the people anymore, if it ever really was. And it's just such a deplorable state of affairs. But I think one of the important things that you hit on there is the idea that just as no one is more enslaved than he who falsely believes himself to be free, perhaps nobody is more easily duped than those who believe that their sources of information are somehow alternative, when really they're just bought and paid for by the foundations, which are nexused in with the corporate governmental control structure. So again, we have these organizations that are phony and bought and paid for by the opposition that we're seeking to go up against. And on that note, we saw, for example, earlier this year, just a remarkable set of affairs where the Obama administration was awarded a Transparency Award for openness in government by five NGOs that are supposedly government watchdogs that were actually awarding Obama for his commitment to openness in a ceremony that took place behind closed doors, completely in secret, off the record, and with no reporters. Again, just, I mean, so ridiculous, it would be laughable if it wasn't so serious. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about that situation and what you did in that situation.
In that situation, and even though I've been aware of these organizations and their collusion, intimate relationship with the government, like POGO, et cetera, the ones that we've been talking about, when I read the news, it came as a shock. It said that these organizations, actually three of them, are government whistleblower organizations, okay? And that's Project on Government Oversight being one. They actually went to President Obama and they said, we are giving you the Transparency Award. And when they went there, the Obama administration said, we have to keep this meeting a secret and classify this meeting. And these transparency organizations, they said, okay, sure. So there was this secret meeting between Obama and these Transparency Whistleblowers Organization. And during this secret meeting, they presented this president with the award, a Transparency Award. This was like the biggest slap of all to us, the government whistleblowers, considering the fact that President Obama has had the worst record of any president in the history of the United States when it comes to whistleblowers. There has been no president in his 250-plus years history in the United States that has been jailing government whistleblowers, going after them, persecuting them, prosecuting them. You have Thomas Drake's case, the NSA whistleblower who reported government fraud and abuse. You have the James Risen case with a New York Times reporter that Obama administration has been pursuing far worse than even the Bush administration was doing. You have Bradley Manning in jail. You have state secrets privilege being invoked more so by Obama than George Bush. And pretty soon it's going to be more than all presidents combined, the number of times that he has been actually the worst president when it comes to secrecy and government whistleblowers. Yet these organizations gave him this transparency award. All these whistleblowers, Colleen Bradley and I, we sponsored, co-authored this this petition, and we had all these well-known government whistleblowers sign it, saying, taking it to these organizations, saying, take it back. And not only that, they gave Obama this award, they didn't give it to him 3 years ago during the beginning of his presidency to encourage him to be a better president than George W. Bush. They gave Obama this award only 4 months ago. This was around March, April of 2011. This is after Obama doing all these, committing all these violations of our constitution and going after the whistleblowers. And you know what? The only response we got actually from out of these five organizations was from the director of POGO, Danielle Bryan. They said they disagree with our assessment of President Obama, and they believe in the history of United States, he has been the most transparent president. And later we found out that this was, and this is from POGO's own internal whistleblowers, that was that the decision came by the board of directors. You know, we talked about the Rockefellers and George Soros, and that George Soros was the one who actually pushed this hardest for this award to go to President Obama. And so nothing happened. They didn't take back their award, and they are still standing by their assessment of this president being the best, the most transparent president this country has ever had. And not only that, it seems like now they're also reaping more personal benefits from it, because President Obama now included George Soros together with one of these organizations, Tom Blantis, to head the White House's Open the Government project for other countries. And they are starting, I believe, with Brazil, because we have been so open and so transparent as a nation, as a government here, that President Obama now wants to expand. And he wants to take our model and say, this is the model of openness we want you to implement in your country. We want you to jail your whistleblowers, and we want you to go after your reporters, because that's the kind of openness. We want you to be open to these notions. as I said, these organizations are part of now President Obama's coalition to promote openness in other parts of the world, and serve as a model of how we should be open and how they should be open, or maybe how they should not be open.
Well, oddly enough, I kind of agree with them that Obama is one of the most transparent presidents, just not in the sense of the word transparent that they mean. But I guess that brings us really back to the beginning of the conversation, because one of the points that we started on today was to talk about how whistleblowers are really no different. They're not a special category of human being. They're just people who are just trying to do their job. And in that sense, then, I think it brings us to the point where we are all whistleblowers. Everyone who wants to see the government do its job and to function properly and for fraud and corruption to be rooted out of the system, we're all whistleblowers. So we all have to stand up for those rights that whistleblowers and all of us have, whether in the United States with the First Amendment and Fourth Amendment and all of the other constitutional protections, or people all around the world in different governmental systems. So I guess really this brings it back to personal responsibility, and as you said before, trying to take back these rights that unfortunately have been ceded to the corporations, foundation, governmental structure. So on that note, I guess let's bring it back to the media, which is always one of the most important linchpins in the dissemination of information in our society, and how people really need to start taking their energy and time and investing it in in something that's actually going to feed their mind rather than the kind of corporate garbage that comes through the mainstream media or the foundation-funded garbage that comes through the alternative, the quasi-alternative media. So perhaps you can talk a little bit about that and then the founding of BoilingFrogsPost.com.
Sure. And you really touched upon one of the most important topics, saying we all should be whistleblowers, and all of us who are trying to do something about this government are considered, based on the definition that is being used today for whistleblowers, we are whistleblowers. And raising awareness and putting the real information out there is a very, very important step that the mainstream media is not doing. And it is important because I sometimes give this analogy, the example of how with the AA meetings with alcoholism, when the first step is for people to stand up and admit that they have addictions before they start addressing and going through the next steps. You have to start by admitting to what the problem is first and take responsibility, personal responsibility for that problem, because it's easy. And much, much easier than acceptance and admitting to personal responsibility is to keep saying, our government is doing this. Congress is being corrupt and doing this. And even with the lot of anti-war movement people, you know, they are saying, well, we don't want wars, okay, but the government is doing it. And those awful people are making the decision and doing it. And we are not taking any self-responsibility in this to say, actually, we are participating in this. We are paying tax. We talk about terrorists having financing, you know, and the people who provide material support to terrorists. Well, our government is implementing these terror practices, either the bombs with the drones that are killing and ripping children and innocent people, okay, or kidnapping and, you know, rendition and torture, assassinations. Well, we are providing that material support for these terrorism practices, these terror practices and implementation by our government. We are financing it. So without our money, they wouldn't be able to do this. So we are paying it. We are financing it. Also, as long as we in our nation, in the United States, as long as we go pretend, because it makes us feel so good to say, well, maybe not perfect, but we are a democracy and we have a representative government, then we admit to being part of this system. Because if we believe and if we say we have representative government, and that representative government, this is a Congress, this is the White House, they make decision to go and drop those bombs with those drones and kill and torture people and go after the whistleblowers, then they say, well, we represent you. They're representing us. So either we have to quit saying that and say, we don't have a representative government. This is not a democracy. It's far from it. And then take action, or we have to quit all this criticism, because it's this abstract word. Government is doing it. The White House is doing it. The government is doing it. The Congress is doing it. I don't know. They are not. I don't see them going and really doing this stuff. I see us paying taxes every month, financing those wrongdoings. And I see that we go to those ballots and we cast our vote and we say, we choose you, Mr. X or Mrs. Y, to go represent us. And if we elected them and they are saying they're representing us, and they, if we are saying they are our representative, then that means that's who we are. We are the terrorists, and we are the ones who are participating. So it needs to start by first standing up and admitting to the fact that we don't have a representative government. They are not representing those of us who have, you know, who have some level of morals in terms of wrongdoings and torture and assassination and killing civilians and jailing whistleblowers. We have to separate ourselves from those who are implementing those. And it has to start from that. And that awareness for us to see it enough to admit to it has to come from the media. It's not coming from the mainstream media. It's not, of course, it's not coming from the quasi pseudo alternative media, you know, sponsored by Nation Foundation, Soros Foundation, Rockefeller Foundation. It's going to come from us, the people. When we say we don't, I mean, as Boiling Frogs Post, one of the first pledge I made to myself first before I did it to my readers was, I am not going to accept a single penny from corporate advertisers. I don't care if it's Google. I don't care if it's BP. I'm not going to. That's one. Number two, we at Boiling Frogs Post, we are not going to go to the foundations. We're not going to go to them and say, give us money and consent to the strings they want to attach to those large dollars. Nothing is free. Those dollars come with their, with a price tag, with expectations. And that's how we picked our partners, you know, whether with you and the Corbett Report or with Peter B. Collins, we formed a team that says we are truly independent. We don't get money. We want to represent people. We want to represent what we stand for in terms of rights against wrongs. And it starts from there. There is no other way around it. And then to raise the awareness as not a partisan affiliate entity, not as a foundation attached, facility, and not as the corporate advertisement driven entity that cannot survive without those establishments that are bringing about all this wrongdoing. So that's where it starts, and with the awareness, and then translating these into action. And we can only do so much by raising awareness. But at some point, there comes a time that we have to take actions on these, all this information that we get. And that's where we are moving towards with people like you, with Boiling Frogs Post, with our team members, to say, put the information, educate people, and then say action. We can't just sit and talk about it and write about it.
Well, in fact, we do make that the decision to make action every single day, as you point out, when we give our taxes, when we buy things from these mega corporations that are part of the system, when we tune into the quasi-alternative media and listen to what the foundations are trying to tell us. Every single day, we make the actions and make the decisions which actually contribute to this system that we're fighting. And I guess if you want an analogy of that, if we're fighting some sort of multi-headed hydra beast of corporate and government and foundation control, well, we are the heart of that beast because we're giving it our money and our time and our attention every single day. So I guess the point is people have to turn away from that system and start to build up the alternative, the true alternative system that will actually hopefully one day reclaim all of those things for ourselves instead of relying on governments or whatever to bestow it upon us. So again, people have to make that decision by deciding to give their time, money, and attention to, for example, media outlets like Boiling Frogs or globalresearch.ca that are actually going to contribute to informing them rather than propagandizing to them. But I guess it's just such a monumental, overwhelming topic that we can only really graze on the top surface of it here. But I certainly hope people will be tuning into Boiling Frogs Post for more on the topics that we've raised today. And of course, Global Research, which covers these types of topics on a regular basis. So Sibelle Edmonds, I think we're going to have to leave it there. An incredible conversation, and I want to thank you very much for not only this conversation, but for all of the work that you've been doing over the years trying to raise awareness to these very important issues. So thank you for taking the time to talk with us today.